This is February 6, 1992, Ari Olds Museum, Shirley Bradley, Lisa Fine. We're going to be interviewing Vern Cook on his real memories.
You don't know until it happens.
We're on.
True, I suppose.
Okay, this is for Vern Cook, February 5th, 1992,
9:30. No, what do you want me to do? Just begin narrating?
We'll just start asking you some questions then we'll start rolling
okay.
it away.
Why don't you just tell us to start off when you worked at Rio?
Okay.
When you started and...
I started... In 1944, because I turned 17 in 1944.
Okay.
And so very shortly, either a month or two after, then I got to work in that reel. Ironically, the only way I could get in there was to be a sweeper, which was a good job. And but it wasn't very long before I transferred over into stock control. And so then I was a stock chaser on the final assembly line. I had the area that I covered was the frame line, and what I had to do was go all through the plant, get bolts and nuts and parts, and I had a section in there that I had to keep supplied with all the different stuff that they used to assemble a truck.
Mm-hmm.
They were building army trucks, 6x6 army trucks. And I worked at that until I got drafted. And then I went into service. I come back in a couple of years.
Oh, so you were drafted late in the war?
Yeah.
Because you were young?
Yeah.
And
I was drafted in 45.
Yeah, that's like my dad.
Yeah. And so then I, as the war wasn't completely over with, but it ended before I got out of basic training.
Mm-hmm.
And then I came home, went to New York, took off for Germany. And spent a year in Germany.
During the occupation?
Yeah. And your dad there too?
Yep,
that's
right.
Okay.
You told me about the destruction.
It was very devastating
that he went through.
And so anyhow, I came back. It must have been 47. And I worked until 1948, and then I left and went to work for the state. Because of the reel was up and down. And I was only working like a half a day a week or something like that. And so I got an opportunity to go to work for the state. Fortunately, I took that.
What kind of wages were you making before when you went into service at the age of 17? And then what did you make when you came back from the service?
As near as I can recollect, when I started in as a sweeper, it was around $1 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I went to work on the line, I was making... while I was working as a stock chaser on the line, I was making about $1.10 an hour, which was maybe just a very little bit less than people working on the line, actually. And then when I came back from the service, I went to work in the export department as a stock chaser, but I had to use electric truck to go all over the plant, pick up stuff. And then I transferred into the motor plant, and I had a group of men that were machining different parts, and I had an electric hand truck that I put stock to their machines, and then I'd take the machine parts away and put the other in. They were a grand group of guys that had been there for 18 years. They just treated me awfully nice.
Old-timers?
Old-timers.
Yeah.
Any of their names?
I can't really remember their names to save my name.
But they were nice to you, huh?
Oh, they were exceptionally nice to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they were
good. And they taught you the ropes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I used to stand around and if one of their machines would break down, or maybe automatic device on it or something like that, I'd stand there and help hold the button so they could get their number of pieces out. They were piecework.
Right.
And actually, I would make just a very little bit less than they did. I just didn't have to sweat it quite the same way.
You didn't have to make production.
Yeah. And they hated, the foreman especially hated, and I wish I could think of his name. He's a nice guy.
This is when you first started?
No, when I came back.
When you came back, would this be an export?
No, in the motor plant.
In the motor plant.
And they wanted me to stay, but they couldn't help it. They had to lay me off.
Why was there a layoff?
Well, because it was after the war, the truck production, the military contracts were gone.
Yeah.
And so they just didn't have that many orders for the regular trucks at the time.
There were several strikes, too, in that period of time, weren't there? Coal and steel and railway?
Yeah, there was a lot of that kind of stuff, but just everything was generally slowing way down.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I quit, I got this opportunity to go to work for the state, which I had already worked in the same place originally before I went to the Rio. I kind of made a circle.
I see.
Mm-hmm. And I was making $1.46 an hour, and I went to work for the state at $1.06 an hour. The difference is, of course, I wasn't getting in only maybe 4 or 8 hours a week to work at the Rio, and at the state I was getting 40 hours a week consistently, so actually making more money, which is really what I had to have.
When you went in at the age of 17, did your dad help you get into this?
Oh, yeah. He used what little influence he had to help get me in, because of course they really didn't want to go ahead and hire somebody at 17 too bad, because you were restricted as to what you could do. In other words, technically, I wasn't supposed to be driving any kind of power equipment, but I drove it all the time because I had to in my job. I had to move stuff around. So
nobody ever challenged you?
No, they never bothered me. Interesting thing at the time, of course, with the war going on, when we all had a badge that had our picture on it, and you had different color codes on it, and I had one that I could go all over the planet. I thought that was pretty neat. Well, of course, I had to do that anyhow.
And that's what the badge was signed to show who can go where?
It would be, I think I had a gold badge, and that meant a golden stripe underneath it, and that meant that I was able to go in restricted areas, all different parts of the plant. And if you had a red stripe in there, you were maybe in the water plant. If you had
was that for security for the war?
Yeah, security purpose. So I thought that was pretty neat to be able to do that.
Yeah.
When you came back after the war and went back to work, you didn't have to have that type of badge.
No,
you just had a general.
No, then we just had a badge with a number on it.
Right, so they knew you were an employee.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just go in, punch in.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got around a lot of different places, of course. And
were there a lot of women working there during the war?
Oh, yeah. I met my wife there.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Another one.
not another wife. I mean,
no, another one met his wife at the Rio.
Yeah, she was working on the transmission line, and then we had an inventory. So she was doing the writing for it, and I was doing the counting, and that's how I come to meet her.
Mm-hmm.
In most cases, I didn't really get friendly with too many of the women because they were a great deal older than I was.
They were married and had families already.
You know, even a woman that when you're 17, even a woman at 25 or 30 seems pretty hopeful.
Sure.
It does at 17.
Sure.
17, you had graduated from high school?
No, I quit school.
What grade did you quit school in?
I was in the 11th.
And you quit so you could get a job?
Yeah. Because I couldn't concentrate on that. I wanted to get out and get in the service. And my folks had signed for me to go in. I would have went in at 17 and wouldn't do it.
Oh, they didn't want you to go in?
No, my brother was already in there, and you know, a lot of friends getting killed and so on. And they wouldn't go for it.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I was just totally unhappy. And
you felt left behind.
Oh man,
yeah.
I really hated that. And so, yeah, they signed, I went. They wouldn't do it, so I just had to sweat it out that way.
My dad had to have his parents sign for him, too.
Well, when I got drafted, that was the happiest day of my life.
My dad was delirious when he enlisted.
Oh, yeah.
He really wanted to go.
Yeah.
He had already started a little college, but he quit to go
overseas.
That
was a common thing.
Yeah.
Oh, sure it was. My husband's father in the First World War wanted to get into the First World War, and America wasn't in yet.
Mm.
And he was going to the U of M. So he heard of a program that he could go in with the Canadian forces.
Oh, sure.
So he and a group of his fraternity brothers did that, and he served with the Canadian Forces for quite a period of time before America got into it, and then he transferred over.
They had him in the same thing for World War II. There was a lot of people in the Canadian Forces.
Yeah, true.
Flyers, whatever.
So you were born and lived in Lansing most of your life?
Born right in the north end of Lansing.
And your father?
Well, he was born in Bay City, and he came to work in Lansing. He worked at the old auto body at first, when he first came here.
The auto body.
Now, that was down on Turner Street.
Oh, in North Lansing.
North Lansing, the big old building there, and that was a...
Corner Turner and Grand River.
Oh,
Victor Auto Body.
Yeah, that's where he
worked. Brings up something I heard last week from a lady.
Oh, really?
You know, around what year he came from Bay City? Did he come?
Yeah.
You don't know?
I don't honestly know.
Okay, but he came to work.
Came here to work. And my mother came from St. John's, and how they came to come in contact, I have no idea.
Yeah. What was your dad's name?
Ralph Cook.
Ralph
K. Cook.
And then he went from Victor Auto Body to the Rio.
Mm-hmm.
What about when would that have been, do you think?
Well, I'm guessing that I think he worked at the Rio all the time that my sisters were around, as near as I can figure out. Tennessee. And my older sister is 74. So now if you deduct 74 away from today, what do we got?
Pretty close to 1920.
Okay. I'd have to say it was right in that area.
Well, a little early, 1918,
right,
something like that.
1918. About the end of the First World War.
Yeah,
right?
Around the time of the war.
Yeah. Yeah, I would guess that's probably when he went over.
Yeah. Do you remember as he told you as you were growing up, what he did when he worked at the shop, what he started out doing, or what the conditions were like?
Conditions were extremely bad, and he worked in the punch press department, and he worked in the punch press department all the during the time that he worked there, but of course before he got done, he was doing a great deal less laborious work, because of course he got older. He got injured, he had the end of his finger nipped off in the punch press.
What kind of benefits did he get? Did they
help
him?
Nothing. No. Just
how about doctor bills and that sort of thing for the finger?
Well, you know, I never asked him about that. I don't know how that worked out. But he had time off for it to heal up, and when it healed up, he went back to work.
Well, at least
I
kept his job.
That's more than most. That's about the extent of the benefits they had.
You said things were really bad.
The working conditions were extremely bad, and then of course if a foreman or if they had a great dislike for you in any way, why, they didn't have any arbitrational situation at all. They could just push you out the door, and so that puts you in a position of really busting it. And he worked longer hours in the day than what we do now, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure just exactly what that was. I would guess it was 10-12 hours a day.
Maybe 6 days a week?
And 6 days a week and minimal.
Did they have night shifts?
No, I don't know if they did or not. I don't recall.
Okay.
I don't know that myself.
That's why I'm curious.
I don't know. I never even thought that.
But they certainly do now. You know, they have to keep those factories going all the time.
I know. And he said that, of course, the Rio in itself, when I worked there, it had lots of old stuff around. It was an old building anyhow. And of course, it wasn't what you'd call the best place to work, cleanliness and so forth.
Safety-wise,
yeah. Because it was being built old, it wasn't really to accommodate the equipment they finally got in there to use. So, and then, as I say, they could just kind of bump you out the door if you didn't make your production the way you should.
Or if your job was too dangerous, it didn't do you any good to complain.
They didn't have the safety devices. Lots of people got, it wasn't an uncommon thing at all for people that worked there to have fingers off and paintings off and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I used to watch him run the big, excuse me, watch him run the big shears that they cut heavy metal with.
Mm-hmm.
You'd stand there watching when I was first started as a sweeper. I was fascinated. And here they were shoving that stuff in. Big thing, choom, coming down
right,
and cutting
up. Leave it first.
Oh, man. They
had to put your hands, did they have to put their hands in the machine?
Well, of course, they were trying to avoid that as much as possible.
They had to feed that sheet
of metal
in.
They had to feed that darn stuff in there. I'm like, gosh. No, they'd have made a miscue.
That was a big machine that had...
Huge. Bigger than this room. Great, great big, long thing. And a huge thing go up in the air and it come down. Well, it cut at least a quarter-inch steel or bigger in some cases, and they would choo, go like that.
So you can imagine what that would do to a person's hand.
You know, put your hand or finger in there, take it right off, wouldn't even miss it.
Right.
Yeah. Wouldn't even know what happened.
Guillotine.
There were a lot of people that, actually there were a lot of people that got killed in those places. And I don't
really
necessarily know about the real, which brings a point in mind that I'll add to it. My brother did get hurt seriously at the real.
Mm-hmm.
Fluke.
What happened?
Well, he hadn't worked at the reel before he went in service, because at the time he went in, well, then you couldn't buy a job anywhere. You know, he was 20 years old, couldn't get a job nowhere. And that was because he was older than me, you see. And when the war started with him, he got drafted right away. So he come back out after 5 years in the service, and he got a job at the reel. Well, this is the normal pattern that people would follow. The boys in the family would generally go right to the factory where their father worked.
Yeah.
It was a, well, you know, just preconceived idea. That's what you'd normally expect to do. So we were all three working there at the same time, but he didn't get hurt at that time. I had went to the...
The three of you, your dad, and your brother?
Yeah, we worked there all at the same time.
Yeah.
And but I had left to go to the liquor commission. And my brother was still working there, and he was a master mechanic. Education-wise, he couldn't cut the education business at all, but he was a genius at assembly or mechanical.
Did you learn that in the war, or did he have that?
I don't know. Just kind
he
of.
He just had it.
Yeah. Well, actually, when he was in the service, well, then he was a range sergeant, so he could take any kind of a weapon they had, tear it apart, put it together, you know, without even being taught. So
mm-hmm.
He just had a talent for it. But anyhow, he was working on the line, final assembly line, and he was a fill-in man. Whatever, when somebody had to go to the restroom, when they had any kind of an absentee for whatever reason, why, then he would be the person to fill in that particular job. So he filled in this job this morning, where right where they lowered the dump bodies for military trucks down.
Mm-hmm.
And the ring that was holding it broke, and it hit him in the back. It's amazing it didn't kill him. But anyhow, it severed his spinal cord here in his back. So he was paralyzed from here down for 15 years.
Oh.
Yeah, bad.
What kind of, how did the real react to this? What kind of help did they give him?
Well, he drew compensation. He drew workman's compensation, and he drew a non-service connected disability.
Right, but that's not connected to Rio. That's just
right,
national
right.
programs.
Mm-hmm.
They offered him settlements, but the type of injury that he had required that he would spend 6 and 8 weeks and even more at times. His medical bills were unbelievable. So he had the option of signing and taking what would be considered a large sum of money, which wouldn't last long. Or he had to go ahead and take the compensation to maintain the medical.
Yeah.
So that's what he chose to do.
Yeah, sure.
He didn't have a choice.
But this was all done through workman's compensation?
Yeah.
Not the real,
no.
The real made no.
No.
20 years before that, though, there wouldn't have been any workman's compensation.
Nothing.
That's right.
Nothing.
It wouldn't have been
just
anything.
Completely out. So what happened is that there were times when groups of people from the men from the reel would go ahead and help by donating or helping he had to have special ramps and so forth to get in and out of his house and into mm-hmm. his car. He drove his own car just as well.
But you're saying people at the Rio helped?
There were times, you know, it wasn't a lot and it wasn't often, but periodically they would come along and give him a little lift and getting some kind of a thing accomplished. So their heart was in the right way.
Sure.
It wasn't the people's fault.
No, and that kind of harks back to what we've been hearing right along from other people who worked at Rio, the family feel that
yeah.
you cared for
each
other.
Yeah, they did. They were supportive as it could be. And it was a fluke. You know. They misgauged, they welded a ring that should have never been.
Yeah, and the weld didn't hold or something?
Something about it, did you?
This was a whole truck body that fell in?
A dump body from a military truck, which it really was a hefty one.
Oh, the dump would be the back of a dump truck.
Back end, yeah.
Okay.
And they lowered that from another area coming in over the final assembly.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, a fluke where that broke. And, you know, 15 minutes before or 15 minutes after, he wouldn't have been there. But it had been somebody else.
True, yeah.
I mean, it was going to come down in that area.
Yeah.
And I think he was 33 at the time. So that was pretty tough business there. Yeah.
To go back a little bit
mm-hmm.
to your dad's time there, do you have any memories as a child of all the different kinds of things that the company sponsored, like the clubhouse and...
The clubhouse I was well acquainted with because
yeah.
we went to that practically every week.
You did.
And of course, back in those days, didn't have the transportation. We didn't have a car.
Mm-hmm.
I can recall many, many times, and we lived on North Washington Avenue.
Right,
1200 block.
Right.
We walked all the way up to the Rio to go to the hoop. I remember diving in and out of the stores uptown. I was just a little kid.
Yeah.
And I remember going into the Rio clubhouse, seeing movies. I seen some silent movies there.
Right.
Actually did.
Right.
And I remember this little car, the miniature car that's like...
For the kids,
yeah.
Yeah.
1907.
Yeah.
It was here a while.
Oh, right. The baby Rio.
Baby Rio.
The baby Rio.
Yeah. And of course, as a little kid, well, I was totally fascinated with that.
Sure.
You just dream about having one.
Now, where did you see the baby Rio?
It was in the Rio clubhouse, right in the lobby.
Just on display. You
mm-hmm.
couldn't get in it.
No, you couldn't touch it.
But just to look at it.
Oh, yeah, it was wonderful. And I can remember that there was a big, big crowds of people going there.
Yeah.
And I remember they had a concession stand, and my folks always somehow managed to come up with some money for us to have a little bit of candy to go into the movie with.
Right.
I'm sure they had very little. Of course, I was born and raised in that area. I didn't expect too much, so I got along fine. I enjoyed it very much.
Yeah.
And I remember the large organ, and I remember the piano where the mood music was played for
the
silent film.
Sure.
And then I also remember that down in the basement was where the bowling alleys were.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, now ladies and little kids didn't go down there.
That was
strictly a man's world.
Is that
you
right?
No.
Huh,
lady wouldn't go down there.
Mm-hmm. Did your dad bowl in any of the leagues?
No.
That
to my knowledge, he never bowled. Anything like that.
Or any of the sports teams? Because, you know, they had lots of sports teams.
They have a football team and a baseball
team,
do they?
No, if he did, I never
knew. You never knew?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. My dad was a wood carver by hobby.
Oh.
So he did lots of that.
Uh-huh.
And, in fact, there's still a lot of it over at my sister's house. She has a whole place, and much of the carvings are still there.
Yeah.
Hopefully someday they'll be... get old enough to be strictly real valuable. They're beautiful.
Antiques.
They're beautiful. Mm-hmm. They actually are. How hand work. And because he came from Bay City where they built wooden ships, and his father and his grandfather had worked in the shipyards, and he worked there for short period of time before he came to Lansing.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So I guess that wood business just kind of moves down through the generations I worked with a little bit.
Were the cars still, have wood components when he started?
Yes.
It did. So
mm-hmm.
did he work on that?
I'm not sure that he had anything to do with the wood part of it. I think he worked all, to my knowledge, he worked all of his time right at the punch brush. Now, I've seen his certificate, and I think it's still over to my sister's where he finished. Apparently, he took an apprenticeship as a machinist.
He did.
Because there's a certificate over there.
Through the company?
Apparently so.
Okay.
Yeah, because there's a certificate over there where he became a machinist.
Yeah.
And that was
they had an apprenticeship program. Mm-hmm.
So he went through that, apparently.
Good.
And, see, I'm a little at a disadvantage back in history in comparison to my sister's family history because I was the youngest one.
I see.
They already got it all talked out before I got there. I keep asking my sister lots of things because I like to pass some of it down to my kids. And they're good to tell me about it, for example.
How about the big picnics they used to have for the Rio employees?
No, I actually don't recall going to them. I wonder if maybe I was too young to remember them, or if maybe they had discontinued them by the time. See, now I was born 27.
Oh, they just, they would have been
I think they were gone,
then.
By then.
Yeah.
That brings to mind an interesting thing, though. I think over at my sister's is a picture of me at 5 years old. Mm-hmm. Chubby little skunk I was. Anyhow, I'm all dressed up in a suit. And that suit my mother had made out of material that my father had gotten from the Rio. Now I assume
they used for
the
upholstery?
Strap material,
the
upholstery in the car.
For the seats?
Seats and on the inside and around. And he had gotten some of that, either bought it or they give it away. I'm not sure exactly how they went about that.
Yeah.
She made that little suit that I got that picture taken.
Oh, I'd like to see that. Did your parents own their house in North Lansing or did they rent it?
No, they rented it. Uh-huh. And then they moved up. Then we moved up to Eureka Street.
Oh, I know where that is. Sure.
Uh-huh. And then I went into service from Eureka Street. And during the time I was in, they moved and bought a house on Pennsylvania Avenue.
Okay. They eventually were able to buy.
Yeah. They. You see, well, that had to be 45 when they bought it.
Okay.
My dad got injured at the Rio at that. The time when I went in the service, he was in pretty tough shape. Mm. He hurt his back.
On the job?
Yeah. He had a couple discs injured in there. I had to have an operation. Well, of course, it was not that good an operation then.
Oh.
Isn't that good now?
No, those are hard. Yeah.
It's a tricky thing.
So he never really totally recovered from that part of it, but he still managed to keep his job. So what he really did was run a drill press all the time up until he, after that, more or less, until he retired. But I used to be able to go around. I remember before I went to service, I would go in and visit him. He was running that's where he hurt his back. On that machine, he was running a punch press straightening kinking axles.
Mm.
That he used to. It was fascinating. You know, he'd done it so much that he'd just set one in, but they were about 60 some odd pounds. Pick it up and set it in this press, and give it a couple of spins, and thump like that, and run a gauge out, it'd be straight. Now, if I'd done that, I'd have to hit it four times each way, probably. But he just run the gauge over, spin the thing around, trip the lever, she'd come down, dunk, like that, and it'd be all straight.
Was it that those axles came in a little bent or something?
Yeah, they'd come in from heat treat, and it caused them to warp a little bit.
Oh,
so then he straightened them.
Straightened them, and put them down, and then they used them in the trucks.
Did his job change a lot from when he started?
Yeah. Actually, I think what he was running those there was big heavy punch presses when he was younger, and then he gradually went along to become working on the different machines that were a lot lighter and progressed up the line. Of course, after the union came in, seniority reigned and you could get a better job then.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you had a lot of seniority like he did, well, then you naturally would be able to qualify or fight for a better job.
Mm-hmm.
Where the new people have to take the tough look, right?
Yeah. And you brought up the union office. That was what I was going to bring up next.
I was thinking of that, too.
Did he join the union when it came in? Was he...
Yeah, when the strike went on, that was an experience I had. I was 10 years old then, 37.
Mm-hmm.
And we lived on North Washington Avenue at the time. And I remember two or three times that he would take me with him to spend the day. And it was quite a...
During the sit-down?
During the sit-down.
So you went inside the plant?
Oh, yeah.
It was quite an experience.
Because we would walk through, I can remember going through the door into the plant, and it was really kind of scary and awing in a way, because they had these big electric trucks with these huge guys on them, weighed tons and tons, totally prepared to block that doorway if they ever tried to come in.
If the guards, if they called it the National Guard or something like that.
They had it totally prepared.
Wow.
And then I remember that they had lots of people around. And there was a couple of the guys that especially liked me for some reason, just because I was a little kid.
Probably
had their own kids there.
Right.
But at any rate, they took me all through the plant. Now, it wasn't working. And I remember the cars, or not the car, trucks and everything, because they quit making cars in 36.
Right.
But the trucks and everything, in different stages of being assembled, in different parts, they took me all through that plant just to show me something to do, something to see. And I remember eating down there. That was quite a fantastic thing, because most of the merchants, I think, in Lansing supported
that. That's right.
And
they sent
they
food.
Donated food. That's right.
Ate good.
Ate better in that.
Ate better in there.
The article there is that they ate better than the plant at home.
Yeah. So I remember that. It was very interesting.
And the women also.
Oh yeah.
Bring stuff that they cooked at home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And do I remember that the men were locked in the plant, or they stayed and didn't come out until the strike was over?
They stayed.
What?
They stayed, and of course, what they did is took turns, you see. Each person had a certain day or a couple of days that he was supposed to stay there. And so that's how it come to be to where he would take me with him. He had to spend, say, Wednesday, it was his turn to take his shot of the duty, and so he'd take me along. Two or three times I went down like that.
You didn't have to stay overnight. You just stayed through the day.
No, he didn't stay overnight anyhow. So I imagine, there had to be some of them stay overnight.
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. Or maybe a night shift or something.
Maybe that was it. Maybe some of them just took turns of going in at night.
Yeah.
Well, you didn't see any problems, any violence or?
No. No, I didn't see anything like that at all. Everybody seemed to be having a good time.
All the workers were.
They were
pretty much for this union coming in then.
Oh, yeah. They had to be, because, of course, if there had been any big dissent against it, it would never have succeeded at all. No, they were all convinced that was what had to come, because their conditions weren't that good.
Did they know about what was going on in Flint?
I'm sure that's what brought it on.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's what really started the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And,
the Flint strike started and then kind of spread, huh?
Yeah.
That was going on.
Because they had been talking about it. So my dad became a steward in the union.
Oh, he did.
And then he went for that for quite a number of years as a steward. And then he became a committee man.
Mm-hmm.
He was committee man up until he retired.
Which was when, in the 50s sometime, or late 40s?
Or that takes a figure. No, he retired. It must have been, I'm going to say 65, 60, probably 62.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
He was there for almost 50 years.
No, he was there.
And he started in the late teens, 40 years. Like
yeah, close to
years.
It. Very close to it. Mm-hmm.
That's a
long time.
Big chunk of your life.
Oh, yeah. Well, I put 36 in it, and I keep telling everybody that's where I grew up, and that it's not wrong either. It's a fact. Spent more time there than anywhere else.
did your dad see the end coming? And I realize that if he was there and left in the 50s, or the 60s, I mean,
mm-hmm.
but did he foresee the problems coming that maybe the real wouldn't be able to survive?
I don't think he ever really would have believed that the real would become non-existent. I don't think that possibility ever entered his mind. He thought it would go forever.
Hmm.
He just thought that it was a downside, and
like other ones.
Sooner or later, it was going to come around and come back up. Because I don't think they ever thought that that possibility existed. Hmm. I doubt it.
The military commitments for the U.S. to put out army trucks to meet demands around the world, but we were stationing troops. Maybe they still had army contracts to build trucks.
At that time, they did, and that's really the only thing that kept the rail going in the last years that it was in existence was those military contracts. Because as soon as they quit coming through and so forth, it fizzled right out. Couldn't compete. They'd already got so much of their capital bled away from them, and they were a good truck too. They were a good truck.
You still see them on the road, the older real trucks.
You couldn't beat them, but that was our stock manipulation. I talk about nowadays is that isn't new.
Right, that's right.
They called it different, but it amounted to the same thing.
Right. To go back a little bit to '30s again, do you remember at all the labor holiday that took place that June? It was a big, in June of 1937, so it was maybe a couple of months after the strike, there was a big labor holiday. Lansing's labor holiday, it was called. The whole city shut down for a day. Do you have any memories of that at all?
Guess I just don't remember
that.
Yeah.
Okay. It was just one day, so, you know, if you weren't around or you were in school, who knows what.
I was 10.
Right.
I probably was so busy with other...
Yeah, we're probably out on the baseball field.
I had a lot of fun when I was a kid. Yeah. I had a childhood with it.
Do you remember that? I remember there being a train wreck.
Oh.
When I was a little girl of about 4 or 5, there was a train wreck right there on the north side of the rail plant.
Yeah, I went down and seen that. Yeah. Train had, a car or something had jumped the track and hit the depot and took the little house that was there.
Oh,
out.
Well, this is in North Lansing? This is in North Lansing?
No.
Right in front of the Rio.
Yeah.
On the north side of the clubhouse.
Ripped up the tracks and there was boxcars and stuff scattered all over. And I know my brother and I went down there to see it. See, he was 5 years older than I was, so...
He took you down there?
Yeah.
You were living in North Washington then, maybe?
I guess we were. I imagine we were. What was the year that would have been?
Well, I've got to think about that. Let me see. 36, 37, maybe?
Yeah, we'd have been living down there.
I'm trying to think. I was 4 or 5, I think. We didn't have a car either. We lived in Hull, but
no.
It was big excitement. Somebody took us down there so we could see it.
Mm-hmm.
Did you listen to the oh no, it may not have been going by then either. I was wondering if you listened to WREO.
Well, you know, I vaguely remember something about that on we had a big old Zenith.
You did
radio.
Have a big radio.
Big old Zenith radio.
Yeah.
And it could only get one or two stations. Very difficult to get them. And I got to believe one of them must have been WREO.
Really?
Must have been. And then, of course, as time went along with them, the stations began to get more powerful. And I guess real went off.
That's right. That's why I was wondering if it went off before you were aware of it.
I think I must have been listening to it when I was real little.
Yeah.
But then I don't remember a time when it went off.
Do you know if people felt differently about Rio than, for example, Ohl's or other companies in Lansing?
Well, I think...
You did stay there a long time, so...
Yeah, I think there was a lot of... And I didn't really realize it at... I guess I didn't realize a lot of things about it until I actually came down here and talked to people, but there was a certain difference there. Like Rio was orphan, maybe? I think maybe after Olds went there. I think that had a tendency to change some of the...
Kind of the father figure there.
Yeah. I can remember my dad and mother talking and stuff about the real, but it didn't impress me at the time. I wish I could really get it straight in my mind what they were discussing.
Mm-hmm.
I think my dad was was not an Olds fan.
Oh, well, that's interesting.
Well, because I think, you know, what he did that my father disagreed with, as near as I can recollect about it,
mm-hmm.
is that Olds wanted to provide their welfare program.
Right.
He wanted to go ahead and provide an almost a case of where it was a certain requirement that you'd be involved in certain activities. And I think my dad thought that was infringing too much on his freedom.
Oh, the REOs expected the workers to contribute to some kind of a welfare fund, or?
No, he provided
it. I misunderstand. He would provide it.
And he provided these recreational activities that he not only provided for them, but I think he almost expected that everybody was going to enter into, and if they didn't, they weren't one of the boys.
Oh, okay.
So that I think you felt a little bit pressured, obligated
to get into, have to be involved in these things in order to maintain your job situation.
To maintain your job.
And I think that is one of the factors that...
And he was more individualistic.
I guess so, independent. And he didn't agree with that. He didn't
mm-hmm.
think that, you know, he thought when he got done with work, he didn't have to be obligated to...
Mm-hmm. Obviously, it didn't hurt him, though, in the plant, because he was able to keep his job
and respectable. He managed to keep it and mm-hmm. all the way through. And but of course, that's part of the reason why I think that Olds left for real.
Mm-hmm.
My thinking about it is correct. I think you could see where the unions were going to come in, and he strictly was against unions.
Right, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Depends on how you look at it. Mm-hmm. You know, he might have been right, and they might have been wrong. But
well, there's always been a division between management and labor.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think a lot of the other workers felt that it was like your dad?
I'm sure they did. They wouldn't have cooperated with what's going on for the union. Coming
mm-hmm.
in,
right?
Because I think that they wanted to be independent in their job. They wanted it to be secure,
mm-hmm.
and they wanted the wages a little bit better, and the conditions better. So,
yeah.
But they didn't want to have to get it by the means that they had to get it by. I think they wanted to get it straight off. Just because of their marriage.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, on the other hand,
mm-hmm.
all the stuff I've read about when your dad,
mm-hmm.
times like when your dad was there,
mm-hmm.
A lot of these workers liked the kind of program.
I'm sure they did.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That doesn't mean they necessarily felt that Olds was right.
Yeah.
But they figured if he's given it to us, we'll take advantage of it, right?
Well, it was a revolutionary idea because other plants didn't do that.
That's right.
So it was a very revolutionary thing.
Mm-hmm.
We had come out of the Depression, too, and that afforded families a chance to have some recreation
mm-hmm.
free.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Something
there,
for the family.
There was good points to it. And what I'm saying about, that wasn't the case in all the situations.
Right.
And because I don't, that was too far back for me to understand all of it.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
I'm going to miss them.
Yeah.
Easy enough. But I know that there was a pro and con for it.
Yeah. That's one of the things I'm very interested in my work,
mm-hmm.
is how the workers responded to these programs.
I think certain parts of them, they liked it. I think that they probably, that's the reason why a lot of them went to work for me.
Right. What they chose.
In the beginning. It might have been the reason my dad went there. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I think that in some cases, it might have got to be too much for
the company to keep it up. You mean?
Well, that was part of it. The reason why they had to drop a lot of it off because it became too expensive.
Yeah,
they had
especially
to subsidize
in the Depression.
All that.
Yeah,
and it was a great idea.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, this old fellow that I used to deliver meals to, he played in the real band.
Oh.
Of course, he died last year, this month.
I was just going to say, give him a name.
I remember when he died.
Yeah, quite a
long
guy.
Yeah, were they at? That brings up something I was just thinking about. And the band, did Real supply the uniforms and the instruments, I wonder? Or did, I wonder, if this man had his uniform yet in the attic? Or?
I don't honestly know.
Somebody donated a real band uniform here to us back when Sue Neller was director here. And so I just got to thinking,
there's
maybe.
There's a drum out there and stuff like that. He had a clarinet. He was always thinking he wanted to give me, but I hate taking him like that.
Sure.
He was 94 years old or something.
You weren't
like
sure
that.
If you really should.
Well, I didn't know. Sure. So I tried to discourage that. But anyhow, he used to tell me about things. He lived just a little way somewhere that was at, but he finally went to the Olds.
Oh, he transferred up to Olds.
Because many of the people transferred over or went to work for Olds.
Mm-hmm. Got a chance to earn a little more.
Yeah.
My father transferred too for the same reason. Mm-hmm. They offered him a little more money. Do you recall your dad ever mentioning Ariel's other than they kind of thought he shouldn't be kind of running his extra time after work, or
no?
Any impressions he ever?
Never heard him say anything about ever having personally been in contact with him.
Mm-hmm.
I got a cousin who used to be in contact with him with Olin's when he was here at this building working with machine shop stuff.
When Bates Edmonds?
Mm-hmm. Well,
No.
After, during World War II.
Oh.
In here in the museum?
He was involved with diesel engines and stuff. And
Hill Diesel?
Probably.
When it was Hill Diesel here in the back of the museum?
And my cousin, I was talking to him the other day, and he was telling me that he used to run into a lot of contacts with him, talked to them many times.
Oh, is that right?
Interesting, yeah. He didn't work for real or anything like that. He had his own independent business that he was a subcontractor during the war, but he was right around in this complex working in these buildings. In fact, I might have worked for him down here once. I worked for him for a short period of time.
For your
cousin. And then I went to work at the commission, so I left there.
Yeah.
Him. And I'm almost positive it probably was right here. But, long ago, don't remember exactly where we went. He took me where we went.
This building's undergone a lot of changes over time.
So, that's about the experience that I had with it. I remember having to jockey all over like this. Bruce Swick had donated a lot of stuff. I knew him. He was in the stockroom when I was. And of course, I had to go to the stockroom and pick up bolts, nuts, and washers, and all kinds of stuff. I kept them guys stocked right up good. I never had a complaint or never had anybody. In fact, they used to tell me how well I'd keep their place straightened up.
The stock truck now, was that different from the other truck called the Go Devil?
Well,
was yours a forklift truck so you could lift up bins of things on your
cart? No, I used to have to use one of those once in a while to get something down there, get it where I could get to it. But really, most of the time I walked and carried bags of stuff with me.
Mm. You know,
and if I had to get anything bigger, they had a little three-wheel buggy. And the more I think about it, the more I think it was built like one of these here curved ash holes out here pretty near. But it was three-wheel, it had the engine, you sat on top of it, you cranked it up from the side.
Oh,
it was,
my.
And a lever here for the clutch.
Oh.
And it was about like the same principle as one of these here. Of course, I didn't realize it then.
No, they didn't throw away the blueprint.
But I scooted around, it had a platform on the back, and you put stuff on there.
What would you do when you went into work in the day? You'd go to a certain department, they'd say, we need X amount of parts.
Well, I had a given area. I had the frame line. It started out where the first frame's down to start putting, and they put it down upside down.
The frame.
The frame for the truck. And it would come down and make a curve and go down here. They would be installing all of the equipment underneath there, the springs, the shackles, everything would be bolted and put on. And then it would get down to this area. And they called it the turnover, because that's what it was. Then they would raise that up in the air, and that was, I always thought, pretty dangerous. I guess it was. anyhow, they'd raise that up in the air and they'd flip over, like, turn it up.
Right side up.
And then they'd set it down, back down on the line, and then they'd proceed, down the line, and they'd put the, all the other little goodies onto it, you see, the cab, and the, we'd go down a little further where my wife was working, and where the transmissions come out. Mm-hmm. And, snap them onto the motors that come down from another place, and install that, and then the cab, and so forth. And then they take those trucks out, and they test run them for, I don't know how many miles or something. Drive them.
Take them out of the road.
Yeah. And then they'd bring them back and tear them down in export departments.
Oh, yeah, we heard about that.
And so box them all up and ship them overseas.
Yeah,
yeah.
We heard about that.
I used to, that was what, there was one item there to see, what were the shackle bolts. And it's amazing. I had to continuously use the same ones over that had been barrel, and I'd have to make a mad dash to the export department to get some getting back, keep the line going, because you don't want to shut down.
Oh, no, you don't stop the line.
And that was the only one I had a problem with, trying to keep that spot. But, so I had all that. So the first thing I would do when I went into work was to make a visual inspection of all the area, and I'd write down what was getting down. Now my method, and it apparently worked all right, they had bins, you know, metal stock bins, and they bolts, nuts, washers, and stuff in there that they needed. And there also were other stock people that were bringing in the larger stuff in with forklifts and stuff, or with other trucks and so on. And so I would visually inspect up and down all during my area that I had to cover. And then I'd go to the stock room, and I'd get another batch, whatever I needed or thought I needed, and bring it back. I kept an extra one down underneath. Not only kept that one full, but I kept an extra one down underneath, so there was no way they were going to catch me. When I had to take the one from the bottom and put it in the top, then I had another one for the bottom.
Good planning. Did you have to sign a voucher or anything when you went into the stock room for all the parts, or did you just get what you needed to take it back to the line?
Just what God just put it. They didn't pay attention to that.
I just wondered.
Yeah, just went in and picked up anything I needed. And
yeah, Charlie, if you want to continue, because I'm going to take it on a different line.
Go ahead. No, I think I need to have what I need.
You said a couple of times in different contexts that your family wasn't real wealthy. You know,
oh, no.
Just sort of made...
No, we were tough shape.
Yeah. Oh, tough shape. Because I got the sense that you could make it, but...
Well, we were making it because, of course, my dad was laid off for long periods of time.
In the 30s?
Yeah.
When the Depression hit?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He was laid off for long periods of time, but he was an ambitious person, and he was capable of doing lots of different things. Mm-hmm. So he done a lot of jobs here, and he done a lot of jobs there, and he done anything and everything.
Yeah.
And I often wonder how he managed, or how they managed to raise us like they did, but somehow
they did.
You
said you had a brother and two sisters?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They were all over here. Mm-hmm. Now my sisters, they know more about that because, of course, they were old enough to realize when the Depression
what it all
hit.
Yeah.
I come along at a time when I didn't have anything to start with, so I couldn't possibly miss anything. I didn't miss a thing. I had a ball,
mm-hmm.
And we lived.
My parents always said. My mother always said I thought we were rich.
Yeah.
Because you know she could do this, she could do that. And
yeah.
What else did she know?
Same for me.
Yeah.
My parents were the
same. But see, I was born right on North Grand River Avenue, on the 1200 block, and then we moved over to the 1200 block of Chestnut Street, and then moved back over to the 1200 block of Washington Avenue. So I never got out of the general area. I knew all the kids in the area.
Mm-hmm.
I went to the same school,
mm-hmm.
Never changed school or anything. So it was no traumatic thing for me,
yeah.
Until we moved from Washington up to Eureka. Now that was a different ballgame.
But then these
I changed school.
Oh, I'm sorry. These were all rental?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All there.
Yeah. And the people who all worked in Rio or went in and out of the Rio during the Depression, they were all sort of in the same boat.
Same thing. We were all in the same boat. Yeah. Everybody scratching along, trying to make do.
Now, some people I've talked to and also read about came from farm backgrounds. So some of them went back to farms.
Farming.
That
brings to mind, I mentioned how I wondered if we'd survive like we did, but as it developed, so my aunt and uncle had a farm out by Stockbridge. And I remember going out there many times, and apparently they gave us endless amounts of food.
Food, that's great.
Because I remember bringing it back. My mother was...
Is this your mom's family or your dad's family?
My mother's family.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I remember bringing back lots and lots of stuff. We finally had a 29 Chevrolet, and had a thousand times that my daddy had to overhaul that before we could go any place. And sometimes we'd get out, I can remember two or three different times, or we got stalled out in the country for that darn old thing, spend a whole day at some farmhouse where he was fixing it, and then we'd go on, and they were extremely nice to you.
Yeah.
They were awfully nice. And then I'd spend a week or two out at that farm. And my brother would spend practically the whole summer out there.
Helping out.
That's probably how we got by. But my dad was capable of doing carpenter work or anything and everything. And I think people kind of stuck together pretty good then, too, because, of course, I was born in the house right next door to the Copets. Now, Copets, long since gone, but where Beeman's is at on the corner of Washington and Grand River now, well, that was Copets originally. And I was born right in the house next door to them. Well, of course, they weren't in dire straits as quite the same way that we were, but they were always furnishing some kind of work for my dad. I think they... really helped out that way. Some of the first jobs that I had, little jobs, helped in the store a little bit. And I'd go in and out of there, down all around, I was just like one of the kids. But he done a lot of work for them, and repaired places in their house, and built a beautiful rock garden for them, and I imagine they need the rock garden like I need a hole in my head. I think they've done that just purposely to give them
a job.
I honestly believe that.
Yeah.
I can remember picking cherries in a big cherry tree, and they would give us so much to pick the cherries, and they'd sell them in the store. We could have got anybody to do it, but they let us do it.
People got by that way in the Depression because
sure
a lot of people did not want to go on welfare.
That reminds me another way that we succeeded two or three or four summers. We went up north and picked huckleberries, believe it or not, brought them back and sold them. Yeah, I can remember doing that. I probably didn't do very much. I was too little. I think I goofed off and rested.
You
ate them.
That's what I was thinking. But I remember my father and my grandfather cutting wood, digging ditches, anything. They did not want to go on welfare or on the dole, as it was called.
Yeah, anything.
Your father probably felt the same way.
Exactly.
There was almost a shame, wasn't there?
Oh, yeah.
If you couldn't support your own family.
Houses were right at the end of Washington Avenue. There used to be Lang's Hospital. But now it's a state Lang's Hospital. Well, Dr. Lang lived right by Estes, the first house from Estes.
Yeah.
And my dad and him were real friendly. I remember going over there many times. And can you imagine in the back? Of course, I don't know if it's like that now, but it was a huge area back there. And my dad and him went partnership to put a garden in back there. You know how he planted the garden? He spaded it all by hand.
No rototillers or anything like that.
How can you imagine a place that... Because this building, not the whole building, but I mean this office area.
Part of an acre, in other words.
And spade that all up by hand.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I can't spade around my bushes hardly. And do that all. I wasn't any help. just goofing around.
Well, you were a little guy. That was your time to do that.
I guess maybe my brother might have helped. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. I don't remember. But I remember him putting the garden. I remember over there talking to the doctor. I remember they had an old car. Boy, would that have been a beauty to have had. It was one of those kind. It reminds me of one of those electric, real high.
Yeah.
I don't know whatever happened to that. Mm.
Your mom stayed home with all of you?
Always, always.
I'm sure she had her hands full.
Oh, she sure did. Monday was wash day.
Yeah.
Tuesday was iron day.
Oh.
And
Wednesday was mending.
Yeah, and Friday, I think, was baking day or something like that. For the whole week.
Yeah.
And she made bread, she made pies and cake. I remember one time, somehow or another, my dad had traded around in his doings and come up with a half of pig, hog.
Oh.
Which was a fantastic thing.
Yeah.
So they proceeded to...
cure it, I guess, huh?
Maybe she canned it up or something.
Something like that. And then I remember, the biggest thing that I remember about it is because of having all of that lard left over, that she made donuts.
Oh,
and I probably ate, I just must have eaten a million. They were so good.
Fresh donuts.
She was awful good, you know. She would just make all kinds of stuff. I don't know where she'd come up with it, but she made it.
So she was resourceful.
She was born and raised on a farm where it was tough going, and that's what she knew to do. And she was quite capable of handling all of that very nicely. Yeah.
Did that change over time, like as it became easier to buy things at stores?
Yes. When we moved away from Washington Avenue to Eureka Street, that was a definite step up in status. Apparently, the work, because of the war, unfortunately,
right.
Because of the war, work for them, I think the money began to come in better.
Right. Mm-hmm. So she could trade off, go to buy a loaf of bread rather than...
Yeah. It got to where she got away from quite so much of that.
Mm-hmm.
It was much more moderate and everything. And so then we got on Eureka Street, then my dad was able to buy a car. Believe it or not, he bought the 36 Rio.
Of course.
It was in 39 when he bought the 36 Rio.
Uh-huh.
And,
you must have all been thrilled.
Well, it was like brand new because the car had belonged to George T. Smith's wife. It had the Market Basket.
The Market Basket.
Yeah.
Grocery store here in Lansing.
Well, he bought that for her, and she never drove it very much. It had very few miles on it. It was like brand new. It's absolutely spotless. And so he bought that car, and we were able to go out. And of course, by that time, the radio was right into its being then. You know, he had all these serials on radio and so forth, and we just loved him. It was the greatest thing in the world. So we were able to go out and travel all around the countryside and had a radio in that car. We could even hear it. We were really little. Oh, it was great. You couldn't beat it.
Would that car hold up better than your Chevrolet or 27 Chevrolet?
Are you kidding me? That darn thing, they had that until 1950, all through the wartime.
Wow.
And I took my wife on many a date in that old car. And I remember one time before I got out of school with them, they come up to summer vacation. My dad let me take that car to go get my last report card, you know, for it. Just had to win for an hour, so I got to drive that car. To school, yeah. I used to come home from school and go down and get my dad from work. He wouldn't drive it to work.
Oh, he wouldn't? Why is that?
I don't know, just always had walked.
Oh, and maybe you didn't want to park it down there and get it bumped into or something? What model was that Rio? Do you remember what color it was? Was it a...
It was black. And it was a four-door, and there was just like this one out. It was real. Flying Cloud.
The Flying Cloud. Mm-hmm. It was a Flying Cloud.
Yeah.
Huge.
It was the luxury car.
Yeah,
I can also remember a couple times that my brother and I would ride our bicycles from the north end up to bring my dad's lunch to him.
Oh.
When he was working in the summertime, because he usually didn't even take anything.
Uh-huh.
And we'd meet him outside the plant, and I think we ate more than he did. he just walked.
He just wanted to get some air.
Yeah.
Well, men walked a lot to work. My dad worked from Holt. Walked from Holt into Lansing. Not very many people had cars in the early days. And they just walked.
You couldn't afford a bus or a streetcar. Or you couldn't afford to spend money.
Uh-huh.
That's right.
So a lot of things come to my mind. I hadn't even thought about.
That's what this is all about. I have one more thing about Lansing. Did your parents, ever think about leaving? Like when things were hard, times were hard, jobs weren't available, leaving Lansing?
Well, if they did, I never heard them mention anything about
it. They felt that this was their home and
apparently
they were going to stay here.
Apparently so. And they were staunchly thinking of North Lansing as being the greatest. I mean, because it was quite a fantastic place at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And they thought that was the ultimate place to be.
I know, I hate to see them torn down.
I know.
Yeah.
Those buildings on Turner, they're unbelievable.
Oh,
beautiful.
I know it. And so they apparently thought that was the ideal place for us to be, and,
mm-hmm.
and that's where they... And until we moved away to Eureka Street, of course it had been getting a little bit downhill by the time we got ready to go, but...
North Lansing had.
Yeah, somewhat, the stores kind of went out of it and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
I can remember selling Kool-Aid on the corner of Iestis Furniture Company.
Is that right?
Yeah, I did that in the summertime. Yeah, right there by the bus stop. They couldn't get away.
Very enterprising.
Oh, yeah.
Hmm.
So...
Because they liked the community, they liked the kind of people that were there.
We knew everybody.
Everybody.
Having been on Grand River and then moving a couple blocks over to Chestnut and then moving four blocks back this way to Washington Avenue, we just knew everybody in the whole area.
Mm-hmm.
And neighborhoods were different then, because moms were home and the kids grew up, they were stable. You stayed, you grew up with the same kids.
Mm-hmm.
Never remember going home from school if my mother wasn't there. Never.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went to West Junior, I used to ride bicycle, and I didn't even go home for lunch because you had it, an hour and a half or something like that.
Yeah, when I was a kid, I used to go home for lunch too.
Riding a bicycle.
Yeah.
I thought it was a big deal when I got to stay at school for lunch.
Right,
in junior high school. I can stay at school.
Yeah.
Did your dad ever say anything, later on when he was getting older in years about how he felt about how the town had changed or how the Rio had changed? Because he saw big changes from when he started.
He saw some big change, and I have to say that, of course, my brother getting hurt such as he was,
that
it changed my dad's attitude
considerably.
He was considered quite a bitter attitude about it. And then my mother became ill. When she was 61, that would have meant him. He was 63. Of course, she couldn't retire at 62 then.
Mm-hmm.
He'd go to 65, and she had cancer. And he wanted to retire, to be there with her, but he couldn't because he had to work to keep the insurance going. So I think, unfortunately, his attitude was very bitter.
Towards the end.
Everything in general. Real status quo, because like I say, she died at 61 and he was 63. He had to go two more years before he could retire, and he went the traditional normal route. He went 7 years and that was the end of him, because he never made it after that.
Mm-hmm.
No, he had a pretty good attitude. He thought that was bad, the way that my brother had to survive it. And I got to say, he was smart for doing it the way he did. Because there were doctor bills that would have been up to $100,000.
Right, later on that wouldn't have been taken care of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. So, before that though, it was a totally different ballgame.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Just those events come along. Because of course, when I left the to go to work for the state. Well, I was just kind of quite a rebel in the family, if there was.
For not staying there?
Oh, my.
Yeah.
You know,
really?
They thought I was a complete idiot.
They all tried to talk you into staying at the Rio?
Well,
they thought
I was a real nut. You know, I was leaving 40 cents an hour cut, and if the Rio was going to take off any time now, then I'd lose my seniority.
That reminds me, that brings up something. You're able to keep your seniority while you were in the service.
Oh, yeah.
And your job was there when you got back,
right.
Or a job.
And they were forced to take you back on. Within 90 days after you were discharged, they had to get in a job.
Within 90 days. Was there any resentment on the part of, say, some of the women who now had the job when you came back and maybe you had to bump?
They were all gone by the time I got back.
Well,
there
were
very many women there.
When you came back for the second time.
Yeah,
yeah.
There are a few women around. They're all already gone.
Oh, okay.
And like my wife, for instance, she was laid right off immediately.
Gone back to the kitchen, so to speak.
Yeah, well, of course, I wasn't married to her then. No, she had to go out and get another job.
Oh, I just meant the women in the shop.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's basically what the idea was.
Did she go to another factory?
No, because there wasn't any
factory jobs.
No factories hired
right.
then. See,
right.
She had to go to other types of jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And,
like secretarial, that kind of thing?
Well, she wasn't trained for that. She had to go into the clerking type.
Clerks.
Yeah. That's what she was able to do. And I mean, even that was tough for a woman to find, because there's a lot of women suddenly all looking for a job.
Right. Men could go for 10 jobs. Only women could go for like 2 or 3. So they
right.
all got
and narrowed
mashed
it,
together.
Narrowed it down
right.
considerably. There
right.
wasn't the opportunities there. So, but then it wasn't long before I got home. We got married anyhow.
Then she got busy doing other things.
Dusting, cleaning. Women's traditional role.
Yeah, well, sure, that's true.
That's yes, that's the way it was then.
And
it was
a normal procedure. You know?
That's right.
I mean, instead of her out working, well, then I worked part-time jobs along with my regular one to keep going.
Oh.
You know, I did that a lot. I worked extra, volunteered to work weekends or painting and fixing anything at the commission I could.
Mm-hmm.
And worked in the parking lot for a buck an hour, and scrubbed floors for 10 years, and mopping jobs. Still got calluses, but it was honest, good work, money. I needed it. Of course, the first thing I did was build a house anyhow.
Your own house?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
I don't know. Boy, I really worked
at least you know what's in it, right?
You
know?
No, I don't own it now. We sold it.
Oh, you did.
Bought a different one. But
you know, this whole thing suggests to me the work ethic that came from your father's time, grandfather's time to your father to you.
Exactly.
This work ethic.
First job I ever got was working in a gas station. I made $15 a week, and I'd give my mother $5 a week, and I put $5 in the bank, and I spent $5. And that's kind of the way it went along. And when I got to working at the liquor commission, of course, I was making like 80 cents an hour. And
the first time before you went to work in the Rio, the first
right.
time.
Right. And so then I gave her, I think, $7 a week, and I put some in the bank, and I spent the rest of it. And then
when I tell my students that when kids working used to give their parents part of their salary, they go, no.
Yeah.
No,
when I went to work at
they
the
don't,
Rio.
They don't do things like that anymore.
I think I made $1.10 an hour when I worked at the Rio. But I worked 10 hours a day, and the line, they had two shifts on the line, and
mm-hmm.
we stocked for both shifts on that 10-hour day. So, I made more money, so I gave my mother $10 a week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as my money went up, so
sure.
I gave her more money. So much in the bank, blew the rest of it.
But that goes back to the real family.
Yes.
And
I grew up
family,
with thinking,
helping each other, staying together, supporting each other.
My mother, and my dad never once mentioned anything about having to pay board or room or anything. I mean, you just assumed. You automatically, that was the first paycheck over, and I expected that's what I was going to do.
Mm-hmm.
It was your normal procedure.
Did all the kids stay home with them until they went and got married themselves, or?
Oh, yeah.
They did,
In fact, I had one sister that never did get married. She was with them all the time.
Uh-huh.
And The other sister stayed until she was married, and my brother also.
Same thing.
Of course, he didn't get married until after he got out of the service.
Right.
And we were all there. They were all at home
mm-hmm.
when I got out of the service. And then we all started getting married.
Like everybody else in the United States.
Yeah.
Having kids like me.
Well, wife and I were engaged anyhow.
Uh-huh.
Before I went into service, so I've been married 44 years, and I knew her three or four before that, so it'd be like 47 years, long time.
Longer engagements in those days.
Well,
but she had to wait till you had a job.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't get married while I was going in the service, because of course, you know, you didn't know what circumstances were going to be.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The Cold War set in right away too, so we still didn't know what futures were
going
to be for anybody.
It was 47 before I got married. Not too long after I got out of the service, really. But not immediately. I got in trouble immediately. I come home, I hadn't seen my brother for a long time. We went up north deer hunting. About 2 days after I got out of the service, my wife just liked that. I can't figure that out.
Now, you know, that just brings up something else I read about in a lot of that stuff. I read about the Rio at the university. They talk about a lot of the guys going hunting in the fall
mm-hmm.
from the plant.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they used to take
my dad used
honey
to
too.
Do that.
Yeah,
because I went
hunting
with him. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
They used to give you time off to go deer hunting and to go pheasant hunting too, didn't they?
Apparently
that?
They did, because
yeah.
He couldn't have afforded to do it otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Unless the company said, go ahead, take a week
yeah.
or take a couple
yeah,
of days
but,
or something.
But then he couldn't afford to lose the money, I don't suppose, I don't know.
Right.
Yeah, they weren't
so,
paid days off.
But I remember going hunting with him a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when I was small, the men in the neighborhood, my friend's fathers, got one day off to go pheasant hunting
mm-hmm.
in the fall.
Yeah, that was kind of a normal way to do
I'm
it.
I'm sure it wasn't a paid day off.
Oh, no.
And they wouldn't have done mm-hmm. that until they had, you know, they were a little more secure money-wise, but
yeah.
This probably was in the late 30s.
Yeah, and helped, if you killed something, it helped the family too, because you could eat it.
Yeah, because there was a lot of game around, and I couldn't remember my dad, how you could bring it at home, but it was...
pheasant's good.
Yeah, it was rabbits, you bet.
Yeah.
I remember eating lots of them. Probably helped us survive, I guess.
Yeah. Well, times are tough, sure.
They sure were. But I can remember many times that there'd be some guy that was out on the road down on his luck would stop by. I don't recall never turning them down. They fed him something, I don't know what.
Homeboys would come to the doors.
Yeah, I remember that happened a lot of times.
No, you sure wouldn't do that now.
No. No,
hasn't
no.
The world changed, though?
Yeah.
Sure wouldn't do that now.
People bumming around. That's all they had to do.
There was a difference between a hobo and a tramp, too.
Yeah.
One would work for his food, and the other probably wouldn't.
Just sort of expected it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't have any more questions,
no.
do you? Vern, thank you very
yeah,
much.
Oh, you're welcome.
We've enjoyed you sharing your memories.